please be sure to include the spelling of your name and your mailing address and phone number. You are eligible to vote in the 2016 election if you contributed a minimum of $25 or volunteered at least 3 hours between July 1st, 2015 and June 30th, 2016. Members, please support your station by participating in this democratic process. Get involved. Vote.
This is Julian Assange. You're listening to WBAI New York. Stay strong and keep listening.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
A very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook, coming to you live at our new time of 8 p.m. This is Emmanuel Goldstein, joined tonight by Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Kyle.
Hi.
And Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
And Jim's over there in the Peanut Gallery.
Hello.
Well, we've had an exciting, action-packed week, doing all kinds of interesting things. We're going to be sharing that. And also taking phone calls. I don't think, Bernie, do we actually have phone lines? I know we're getting phone lines, but I don't see any phone lines around here.
Well, I have been advised that there were two phone lines, a public number and then a non-public number for, secret callers, that are connected to the mixing board there. But,
No one's told me anything.
I emailed the numbers to you guys.
Yeah, no, we have the numbers, but what's the point of giving out numbers if they don't work?
Well, did anyone try it to see what happens?
I guess somebody could try it to see what happens. Hang on. I'm going to hand this piece of paper. Listeners, look away because this piece of paper has the phone number that we're not supposed to give out yet to the studio. And Rob is going to call that number on his phone, which he brought in special for the occasion, and we're going to see if it rings anyway. This is how we find things out at the radio station, folks. We actually have to try it ourselves.
So I would be calling the one labeled studio. Is that correct?
Yes, call that one. And you might wonder, well, we have no phone lines. How are we talking to Bernie? It's magic. It's hacker magic. We just somehow make these things work, even though we're told it doesn't work. Hey, phone lines working. Hold on a second. Hold on. Hello, who is this?
Hi, am I on air?
Wow, we have a phone line.
Yay!
Hang on, let me turn on my radio.
Okay, now we're hearing Rob both in the studio and on the phone, and we're hearing Bernie at the same time. This is very confusing. Please hang up.
Sorry, I was driving.
Wow. Okay, so the good news is we don't have to do this concoction that Kyle puts together every week. Kyle, your services are no longer required.
Yeah,
pick
right.
up your check on the way
but
out.
They were great. They were great while they lasted, I got to say. They
really
were highly innovative.
And we know that he's here in case it happens again, and it probably will happen again at some point. Hey,
no thanks.
There is, though, some good news to report. A listener has received a premium We got an email that a listener got a premium from our show. I think it was a DVD package or something. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember giving those out, but it must have been a while ago. Okay, here's the thing. Since we have another fundraiser coming up next month, we need to know before that fundraiser begins that our listeners have gotten the premiums they pledged for in previous fundraisers. If they have not, if we are getting continuing to get emails that say, I have not gotten my premium that I pledged for many months ago, we are not going to be offering new premiums. We'll still pitch for the station. We'll still encourage people to call up, but we are not going to add to the backlog of premiums that people don't get in a timely fashion. So we need to know, have you gotten your premium? If you have not gotten your premium, email us, oth@2600.com. Let us know you have not gotten your premium. If you have gotten your premium in the last few weeks, let us know that, too. Same email address, oth@2600.com. We will take action accordingly. If people aren't getting the premiums, we're not going to add more to the list. If finally we've caught up to the backlog, then we can start offering more premiums. Either way, we need the station to stay on the air. We will be supporting the station in the next month, but we also have to support our listeners.
Yes, indeed. If you have emailed us regarding a missing premium, we have delivered all those emails. We've collected them and delivered them to management. Actually, I did that. So if you did that and you do receive your premium, let us know that too.
But if you have not received your premium.
But if you have not received your premium and you haven't gotten in touch with us yet, please do. Forward us your donation receipt from the transaction, your confirmation number, things like that, what address you put in, whether it's different now, if you moved, but like all the relevant information to not only locate your past pledge, but to get it to you today here in the present.
And if we do not hear from you, we're going to assume you got your premium. All right? So let us know if you did not get your premium. Yeah, we're going to get a whole bunch of emails, I know, but we have to take care of this. This is called being responsible.
It's definite progress, but we have a lot further to go. It's a sad state. You know, we shouldn't be too thrilled because we can do better than this. We know
it's a sad state, but it doesn't have to remain a sad state because
no.
We have so much potential here.
Yeah.
Look at us. We're in the middle of Brooklyn. We're right here on Atlantic Avenue. We've got an amazing cafe downstairs, a performance space. We've got great people all around us and the promise of a really professional, amazing studio right here that will be our home for many years to come. That is the promise. We can achieve that, but we all, including the people here, have to work together to get there and not do the traditional dividing and isolating that happens in so many organizations. So we hope to have some positive news in the weeks ahead. And, there being an election coming in the weeks ahead, I don't know how positive it's going to be, but we'll just have to live through it all together. I think we all saw the movie, the Snowden movie. I know, Bernie, you came up to town. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see it with you, but I know Kyle and I saw it on the island.
Yeah, Bernie came up. He saw it with me and our guy Junes and, a couple of other friends of ours. And,
Walk out in the middle of it?
No. We didn't walk out in the middle of it. We walked out afterward.
We did too.
You know, the secret post-credit sequence telling you which Marvel movie is coming up next. And that was something else. But we saw the film.
All right. Well, I'll ask you guys first. First, I'll start with Rob, then I'll go to Bernie. What did you think?
Okay, well, I thought it was a solid film. I thought it was... It had that eeriness to it, like when you're watching a fictionalized version of events, you're pretty familiar with the truth behind. I think the film was engaging. It told an interesting story. It told a story very much like the events as they're understood, I think, by many people. I think it will very probably be successful at getting the conversation going. As a depiction of the real events, it took certain liberties, as these things do.
Can you name a liberty that it took?
There was one liberty where, a lot of times they condense things, for time or for, narrative purposes. And there's a scene in the film where Snowden basically makes the decision to copy certain files and take them out of the building where he is. And he does this all at once, and he copies them all onto a micro SD, and there's that dramatic scene of all the progress bars going because that's how we do things in film, and then he leaves. When in the reality, I think it's
He dropped it on the floor too.
Yeah, he drops it on the floor too, and there's that very tense moment where somebody steps on the SD card,
but deliberately steps on it to shield, which tells me that he had co-conspirators,
right.
Which I don't know if that's taking liberties, that he had co-conspirators. If he did not have co-conspirators, the people who actually were there must be saying, hey, wait a minute, I wasn't playing any part in this, and now all of a sudden I've been roped into it.
Yeah, all his former colleagues are getting eyes pointed in their direction
uh-huh.
now, and their shoe sizes taken down. But so apparently in reality what he did was he made the decision much earlier in the course of events and was slowly gathering files over time.
And it wasn't so much inspired by watching the testimony of Liar Clapper. That's his title now. He's official liar of the U.S. government, Clapper, who said that the NSA does not knowingly collect data on U.S. citizens. And in the film, it was that moment where he said that. That's when he started collecting data. But mm-hmm. you're saying that he was collecting data before that, which I believe is borne out in truth. I don't have a problem with that. The reason I don't have a problem with that is because I would imagine you would be collecting data slowly because of the policies you're becoming familiar with and the hints that something is seriously wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening is basically when Clapper gave his false testimony, that was sort of the nail in the coffin. That's when he said, okay, you know what, I'm just going to collect the rest of it and reveal it at some point. That's how I interpreted it.
Yeah, it was the final Clapper caper that that inspired him. But yeah, I mean it shows I think the spirit behind what happened and the motivations. I mean the character of Snowden is shown starting to question things far earlier and you know keep a closer eye on what's going on around him.
I like how he started as a conservative.
Yeah,
I like that, and that's that ties into what I've heard in the past as well. Bernie, what are your impressions?
And just to follow up on it, that's in keeping with what we learned from Snowden's father, who we met at Hope X, who told us a little bit about his son, who's, you know, both he and his father are patriots. But from a constitutional standpoint, when they see stuff's going on like this, they've got to do something. So I think Snowden got some good influence from his father, who was very conspicuously absent from this film. He and his stepmom, who we met, are not in the film in any way, shape, or form. And that my only guess is that Ed Snowden said, listen, leave my parents out of this. They don't want to be involved. And that was one of the deals he made with Oliver Stone. But, yeah, there were some technical inaccuracies in the film. There were factual inaccuracies. But I think what those were sort of metaphors that the director, Oliver Stone, tried to use to represent bigger things that would just take too long to tell. Like, for instance, like all the cubicles or rooms or offices at NSA have these microphones hanging down in the middle of the room. But, I mean, obviously they're not going to have microphones hanging down from a cord in the middle of all the room. But that's a metaphor for, like, there's surveillance going on 24/7. You have to be careful.
Well, it's a way of depicting it pictorially. Like, you can see the microphone. If it's so tiny you can't see it, then you can't really depict it in a film.
Exactly. You can't really tell that story. You could. You go into this whole long, you know, tangent about, you know, how everything is Orwellian there when you work there. But just having a microphone hanging in the middle of the room, that says it without having to use any dialogue up at all. The thing with Clapper, I think that was a representation of all the other misdeeds that he and probably others at NSA discovered and decided to blow the cover on. And like the micro SD card that his coworker stepped on purpose, as the manager or the chief guy was coming in to hide it, and because that would, you know, result in his being probably locked up for life if the SD card was found on the floor. So I think that SD card was a sort of a metaphor for the body of work that he tried to get out and did successfully get out and under a watchful eye. But it was an easier way to symbolize it with just an SD card on the floor. And there are other things like that, too. Movie making, is a lot of it is about metaphor. And as a movie maker yourself, Emmanuel, you've probably seen that as an opportunity.
Well, I was involved in making a documentary, and you're supposed to tell the truth as far as representing how things actually take place. My dramatic license wasn't as liberal, I guess, as a dramatization of something. But I think Oliver Stone knows how to make a movie, and I think he knows how to get the facts out there as well and represent it in a way that's overall accurate. And I think that's what we got out of this film. I've heard criticisms about it, but they seem to be nitpicking mostly about when something happened and how long was he in Hong Kong for. I mean, does that really matter how long he was in Hong Kong for? He said the phone didn't ring for 3 weeks, but he was actually only there for, you know, less than 1 week. I don't know if that really ties into the plot so much. He worked as a contractor. He found some amazing security issues that affect all of us. That's all true. That all happened, and I think just getting that out there, just like Citizen Four did, that's the real important thing that is accomplished here.
And Citizen Four ties into all this very interestingly because, of course, the filming of that documentary is used in this fictional version as the framing story to, you know, to connect everything together. But also, it's the documentary is out there, and you can watch it, Citizen Four. It's very, you know, it's easy to get hold of. But not everyone will sit in front of a documentary, but a lot of people are familiar with just sitting back and being told a story. And I think Oliver Stone knows how to do that, and I think that's what he did successfully with this.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting how Citizen Four sort of took the backseat. They didn't want to get into too much detail about that. It did provide a narrative for him recounting his experience, and the real action you would see would be him as, like, through a flashback telling the story. So they cut back to this Citizen Four interview as a means to go from story to story as it progressed. But I think that it was definitely much more of a dramatization, and it, had they got too close to Citizen Four, that it might not have given their film as much weight, because that was a very serious treatment of it. So, and it just was, it wasn't so clear that that part of it really got the message out. They did have some sort of back and forth with the reporters, but the impact of that film would have undermined this film, I think, if they had talked about it too much.
Well, I do think, as far as people not sitting through documentaries, that's a very, very true statement. People are kind of impatient sometimes. Citizen Four doesn't even feel like a documentary. It feels like you're, because you're watching everything unfold as it unfolded. It's not telling a story of something that happened in the past with all kinds of still pictures and things like that. You're seeing it unfold. It is as exciting as anything fictionalized. So I think the two films are both very worth seeing, maybe even consecutively, seeing how they tell the story and comparing one to the other. You learn an awful lot that way.
I will comment that I think personally that this could have been even an even stronger film. I mean, even in some of the resolution and the conclusion, you hear some of Snowden's own words and so on, and it's, I don't know, it didn't have the impact I thought it might, and it wasn't as clear to me where what they're really communicating, or if they're really taking any sort of or pushing this story or this the stuff we're finding out, pushing that any further. It just sort of kind of ends, and you don't get the sense it's like an ongoing thing as much as in Citizen Four, where they very famously at the end sort of show a bunch of things that sort of insinuate the next steps, mm-hmm. and that this is ongoing, and we'll revisit this at some point.
Well, it ends when he's in Moscow, and I guess to tell the story of Snowden,
yeah,
that's kind of where that part of the chapter, that chapter of the story ends.
Yeah, I just feel like they could have had a little more teeth. They did. It was strong, and it's great to, you know, see a dramatization of it, but could have had more bite. You know.
So you want to see a sequel?
I didn't say that.
Snowden 2.
No.
Yeah. Well, here's part of the sequel, and this happened on Saturday, and I was, I hate to use the word shocked, but I was shocked and appalled by this editorial in the Washington Post. The Washington Post. Didn't they win a Pulitzer Prize for publishing material that Snowden provided? Here they come out with an editorial entitled No Pardon for Edward Snowden, basically doing the job of the government, saying Edward Snowden, the former National Security Agency contractor who blew the cover off the federal government's electronic surveillance program 3 years ago, has his admirers. After the inevitably celebratory Oliver Stone film about him appears this weekend, he may have more. Whether Mr. Snowden deserves a presidential pardon, as human rights organizations are demanding in a new national campaign timed to coincide with the film, is a complicated question, however, to which President Obama's answer should continue to be no. And just, you know, the idea that a newspaper of the caliber of the Washington Post would come out and advocate for a whistleblower to be imprisoned, which is basically what you're saying. If you're saying he does not deserve a pardon, you're saying he deserves perhaps a lifetime in prison in the United States. It's unconscionable. It's just I cannot for the life of me understand the motivation behind this. Now, I know we are all aware that the editorial board of a newspaper and the reporters of a newspaper are not necessarily the same people. So I imagine a lot of reporters are probably horrified by this as I am. But there are just a couple of tidbits here that I have to focus on, specifically this. In justifying this position, they actually say this, and I want you guys to listen. No specific harm, actual or attempted, to any individual American was ever shown to have resulted from the NSA telephone metadata program Mr. Snowden brought to light. Can you believe that? They're telling us that having all of that information of ours basically spied upon by the NSA, we weren't hurt by that. That didn't affect us at all. I mean, how dare you tell us that having our privacy violated did not cause any harm? Of course it caused harm. And they're saying that worse, far worse, he leaked details of basically defensible international intelligence operations, cooperation with Scandinavian services against Russia, spying on the wife of an Osama bin Laden associate, certain offensive cyber operations in China. How about spying on Angela Merkel? You know, things like that. That he basically, PRISM, they say PRISM was clearly legal and not threatening to privacy. What am I reading here? It feels like I'm reading some kind of Soviet-era publication that basically is defending everything the government does. It's disgusting.
Wow.
Yeah, it really is disgusting. Go ahead.
That was a Washington Post, wasn't it, and which was purchased by Jeff Bezos of Amazon.com.
I had to check to make sure I was actually reading the Washington Post, but yeah, it is the Washington Post. It's provoked some rather strong reaction.
Yeah, but it's purchased. That was Washington Post is now owned by Amazon.com. And Jeff Bezos bought it. So you got to wonder what the impetus is behind their editorial, opinions. Where do you think that's coming from?
I don't know. I mean, it's I don't really have knowledge as to how the Washington Post puts together an editorial. I don't know if Jeff himself is responsible for any of this. But it's in this society of ours to have a major newspaper with the respect of the Washington Post come out and say something like this, especially having benefited so much from what Snowden has revealed and not recognizing the amazing public service that he has performed, the sacrifice he has made in doing this. And after having seen, I presume, the two films that basically show this, I don't understand the motivation. I really don't understand how you can, in all seriousness, say something like this.
Yeah, it's funny how I'd like to see the numbers about like exactly how much Snowden's revelations have increased Amazon shareholder value as a result of the Washington Post publishing stories about them.
Yeah, it's they definitely benefited.
Well, what ways specifically? I'm not quite clear on
the Washington Post has published stories resulting from the leaks. But,
oh, you mean like they've profited through headlines? You mean
as a news
sensation
outlet,
and so on. So now maybe and then so now here they're going in a different direction, still getting all that money, just different headlines.
Well, they win respect by publishing something cutting edge, just like with the Pentagon Papers.
Yeah,
and then to go and say they deserve to be prosecuted, it was a crime. You can't have it both ways. You really can't. But this just shows how two-faced certain organizations can be. So that's pretty disgusting. I thought that was not a good thing at all.
Yeah, it doesn't acknowledge the foundation, like the underlying structure that is flawed and sets people up for being materially impacted by surveillance.
Yeah, that's the issue they should be discussing.
It opens the door. It opens the floodgates, whatever analogy you want.
There are so many things that we have learned through the Snowden revelations. I mean, you know, the sale of tape to cover up webcams has gone through the roof. Everyone's covering them up now.
Yeah.
The fact that we know that those can be turned on remotely, that phones can be used to spy on us against our permission, against our will. These are all public services, and yeah, you can say, wow, this makes it harder to catch the bad guys. It also makes it harder to spy on the good guys and to invade all of our privacy. And that is something we deserve to know about. Now, if the Washington Post doesn't want to reveal stories like that anymore, I'm sure there are plenty of newspapers that do. So maybe they should take themselves out of the running for that and leave it to others.
And then in line with a lot of what we do here and the hacker community in general as far as sharing information is to educate people, because through that education, people are empowered, right? You're empowered to take charge of your security or your privacy. And if you understand what kinds of things around you are vulnerable, you'll take steps at least to be aware and vigilant and so on and so forth in your everyday interactions. Whether you really can do anything about the sort of, as I said, systemic underlying problems that are being basically turned into legislation or have been for 10 years. I don't know. What do we talk about on the show?
Well, and it's not the only case, obviously. There are all kinds of other people out there that are revealing things, whistleblowers of all sorts, but also just people who are involved in hacking in one sense or another. You guys heard of this case involving someone named Lori Love, who actually spoke at our conference this past July via video link, because he's in the UK and accused of hacking and being threatened with being extradited to the United States. That is the latest thing. Well, it's not really the latest thing, but it's something that you're seeing more and more of these days. If you commit any kind of a crime that the United States doesn't like, you get a free trip over to our country and you get to spend some time here.
Yeah.
It's really, that in itself really bothers me. But what happened here in this particular case was last week, a UK judge said, you know what, that's okay. He can face nearly a century in prison for hacking into U.S. government computers, and he can get a trip over to the United States to do that. And that alone just rubs me the wrong way.
I was going to say, you can add that it even entitles you to trips, free trips other places, if you count or rendition and all the things that could be possibly conflated with terrorism these days.
Yeah, it's not even about terrorism. It's just about getting into a computer system, allegedly hacking into government agencies and performing some kind of mischief, things that many of us have done in the past. But it doesn't work the other way. If after the show, we decide we're going to hack into, oh, I don't know, pick a country, Iran, France, Japan, friendly countries, hostile countries, odds are, even if we get into the most secretive of their computer systems, we're not going to be extradited to those countries. They don't get to do that. Why do we get to do that? Why do we get to say, yeah, this person, we want them over here because they pissed us off and we want to hold them in one of our cells for a number of years? It just strikes me as not being right.
Yeah, and make no mistake, wherever you are in the world, as you go about your day, you're breaking several laws in other countries apart from your own, and it doesn't matter because that doesn't apply where you are.
Yeah, we've probably broken several laws already just by talking on the air in some countries. Bernie, what do you think of this?
Emmanuel? Yeah, these extradition treaties that U.S. Drafts and signs with most countries around the world are really a projection of American power, the American government power, I think.
Yes.
And as you pointed out, allow the U.S. to extradite people from around the world, numerous countries, while basically prohibiting Americans from being extradited to other countries. But I don't think Americans should feel so safe. If the U.S. starts following this crap, other countries might start doing the same thing and snatching us out of the United States and taking them. How about North Korea or Iran or any other country of the, country of de jure that is hated could, basically kidnap us, take us without our permission and take them over there. So this is like, this is something that should concern all of us, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's a disturbing parallel. We see increasingly the civil unrest in this country based upon the actions of police against the people, the civilians. And we realize we live in a two-tiered society where police can do certain things and get away with it. They can kill people and not even be named and not even lose their jobs and not be questioned. It's kind of like, this person is really high up and you're really low down. And I'm seeing increasingly the United States as a country being viewed as cops and the rest of the world as civilians. We get to do this, but you don't get to do this, you know, because we're better, because we are trusted and you have to believe everything we say. We get to use the drones and bomb the smithereens out of foreign countries, but don't you dare do anything like that to us. And I'm not comfortable in that kind of a world. Are you guys comfortable?
Not especially.
You don't look comfortable. No.
No.
All right.
I would say an analogy also that is apropos would be the sort of distinct difference in how you're measured, right?
Mm-hmm.
Civilians versus an authority, right? They're just simply measured by a completely different standard. Maybe not so much that they're higher up. There should be equity, right? It shouldn't be that they are higher up in any kind of hierarchical sense, but it's a completely different standard they're held to.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Anyway, getting back to the Lori Love story, it's a 32-year-old native of Suffolk in the UK. He's accused of being involved in a series of anonymous affiliated hacks known collectively as Op Last Resort, in which the international hacking group infiltrated computers of U.S. government agencies, including the FBI, the U.S. Army, the Missile Defense Agency, and the Federal Reserve. Come on, who hasn't hacked them? I mean, seriously. And also, I'm reading from a press statement here. I think we all know Anonymous is not a hacking group. Anonymous is more of a barometer of what is out there. It's very loosely, or if it's even organized at all. But in any event, he's accused of being a part of that particular operation, Op Last Resort. U.S. authorities said his actions resulted in the release of employees' personal information, caused millions of dollars in damage. You know, it's hard to believe some of the things they say, that one person is responsible for this. I know there are security issues. I know people's private information is compromised constantly, usually because of poor security. But to pin it all on one person, I think that's a bit of an exaggeration, and I don't see the evidence in this particular case. But anyway, Lori Love has Asperger's syndrome. He's warned that his mental health would pose a high risk of him committing suicide if he's sent to a U.S. prison. His lawyer, the judge, said in her decision last week, "I accept Mr. Love suffers from both physical and mental health issues, but I have found the medical facilities in the United States prison estate are such that I can be satisfied his needs will be comprehensively met by U.S. authorities." That is the most chilling statement that I think I've ever heard from a judge, especially a judge overseas, saying that, yeah, you know, we recognize that there are some cases to be concerned about, but he'll be fine in prison. They'll take good care of him. I mean, does anybody believe that he's going to be taken good care of in a U.S. prison?
Quote, taken care of, unquote.
And what it...
I'm sorry, Bernie, mid-sentence. What?
Oh, I'm sorry for interrupting. Apparently, they don't understand what the Bureau of Prisons, Federal Bureau of Prisons health care program is like. I personally experienced it.
That's right. You took advantage of their facilities, didn't you?
Yes, I did. It was free of charge, so to speak. And I was pretty surprised at that there was a certain level of medical care, but it was more to, like, cover the base, just cover the dots, the I's, and cross the T's rather than provide the actual treatment. It was more like an administrative solution to saying that people were really cared for, with just doing it on paperwork instead of really caring for them.
Well, there is still hope in the case of Lori Love. I know that there is an appeal. Home Secretary Amber Rudd has until November 15th to rule on the extradition, and the legal team is appealing to the high court. Parallels to another hacker case, Gary McKinnon. I don't know if you guys remember this case. I think he was known as a UFO hacker or something, and looking for evidence of UFOs. Also from the UK, also the United States expressed a strong interest in having him visit us for an extended period of time. And his extradition was blocked on human rights grounds by then Home Secretary, wait for it, Theresa May. She's now the Prime Minister, so... Fingers crossed that justice will prevail in this particular case. But as I said, this is happening a lot, not just in the UK, all over the place, and it's not fair treatment. It's not fair treatment of people in other countries. If a crime is committed, okay, you know, be tried in your country, but not extradited someplace else where you've never even been.
Yeah, but wasn't it under Theresa May's watch that they extradited that English kid to the U.S. for posting links to television shows on sites he didn't control? So,
yeah, that's true. But that also wound up not happening, which was a fortunate thing.
Somehow I'm thinking about the stupid swimmers during the Olympics getting extradited.
He had to come to the U.S.
Say again?
He had to come. The guy you were talking about with the, I think it was TV Shack. He had to come to the U.S., but make a deal and sign some paperwork and then be allowed to go back. But it was there was a lot of money that had to be paid and lawyers and all that. So it was not without consequence. He still had to come to the U.S., but he had to deal with it here, and then he was able to go back.
Yeah, and we had his mother, Julia O'Dwyer, on this show as a guest, talking about the case. It was bizarre, and it's still bizarre, and what's going on now is bizarre.
Okay, well, enough of the bizarreness. We had some bizarre incidents happening here in New York over the past week, specifically the Chelsea bombing, as I guess it's going to be known as, in years to come. And all of us in New York, in the city, apparently had an emergency alert go out over our phones. Bernie, I know you were in New York City, and you got to experience this as well, right?
Yeah, I happened to be in Manhattan, and I was awoken at 8 a.m. by wireless emergency alert.
WEA is what it's called.
Yeah, and it's much like I've heard occasionally if there's a weather emergency, but it's the same tones. It goes.
Well, it's the old EBS tone, right?
Well, no, it's a different sequence of tones.
Is it okay?
But it definitely gets your attention. Is the bottom line.
Yeah, it's pretty jarring.
Yeah. Well, I remember during the monsoon after Hope, I got on my phone something. I thought somebody was honking behind me. In a frequency that was the old EBS tone, but it was my phone trying to alert me to something.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, that's an EBS tone. That's that old frequency.
It's different audio frequencies. It may sound similar, but it's different audio frequencies. But the bottom line about this wireless emergency alert message that came out Sunday morning around 8 a.m., I believe, was a manhunt message. It was to be on the lookout for this individual who they believe was responsible for connected with his bombings, and to tune into, it mentioned his name, I can't recall it, and to tune into media, I think it said tune into news media for photos and so forth. And
they didn't have enough bandwidth. They couldn't actually show you the photo. They could only send an SMS, I believe, 90 characters.
There's a text. There's this protocol for the wireless emergency alert messages. But people got the message, including one guy across from a bar that he owns, watching it on CNN minutes later, and saw a picture of a guy and then found that guy sleeping in his doorwell, apparently. So it is, to me, it's a kind of a chilling, effective but chilling method by which the entire populace can be alerted to look for this wanted person the government wants and turn him in, who knows, you know, for whatever merit. But it's kind of scared me, honestly.
Well, Bernie, I'm going to advocate for the devil here just for a few moments and ask you, what is there to complain about? I mean, it worked. The surveillance worked. All the cameras that saw the guy with the suitcase leaving the bombs in various locations, the fingerprint that was on one of them that led to this guy, the alert that had people searching for him and his eventual capture. Seems that all the surveillance worked in our favor.
It did. It did in this case, Emmanuel. But I would argue that, you know, this is going to be abused at some point to look for someone who maybe doesn't deserve that kind of attention. That's my personal opinion. Because once you set an infrastructure, a system like this in place, it will be used and it will eventually be abused because it's so powerful. If you can alert the entire, and this is a highly targeted messaging system, this wireless emergency alert stuff. It was just to the five boroughs. Any cell phone within the five boroughs apparently was alerted. Anyone out, like if I happened to have been in Philadelphia that Sunday morning, my phone would not have been alerted. So it has to do with the geographical limitations, but it's a highly targeted way of getting propaganda. Propaganda not necessarily be a negative thing. Propaganda is just getting a message out. That's what the definition of propaganda is. And I don't know, it's a powerful medium, and we should really be concerned about how it can be used and potentially abused.
I agree, it's powerful, but in what ways, like, do you see it being abused? Like, I think of, like, the Amber Alert system. I don't really feel like that's being abused. I mean, it's used. It may be underutilized. It's there, but it's functions and is activated when it's needed. I think there's other sort of weather-related things that actually tie into this new mobile emergency alert system. And actually, I think it's a good thing. I mean, I think if there was something nationally that we needed to know about, and then they could tailor those to a region or a specific populace, I think that's important from an organizational standpoint and a community like emergency response and that kind of thing. You really need that on a lot of levels to work the right way so that, I mean, we have these powerful, powerful phones. The fact that they're even using something as old as SMS, I mean, it's sort of cute, but it should work, and it does, and it will serve us. And with this all this technology, to not have systems like that, I think we would be really making a mistake.
Oh, I really agree with you, Kyle, on that, but it's not SMS. It's a different messaging protocol that phones are required to carry just for this.
Well, it's very much like SMS, but
it looks like a text message. It looks like a text message, but it's not actually SMS. Point is, yes, this is a good thing. This is a good thing we have. However, this is the first instance this Sunday morning whereby it was used to look for an individual. And who knows? I mean, this was great. It worked out well. But I'm just saying there's an infrastructure in place now where the government can say, go, we want this person. Find him for us so we can get him. Who knows where that could lead eventually.
But how is that really different than just airing something on television that everybody sees? I mean, it's more efficient now because everyone carries these phones around with them. But the mentality behind it, putting out an APB for somebody, how is it different than that?
I think it just reaches into more people's lives. Because these are not optional messages. You can't turn this off. Your phone will go off with this message saying, find this person for us and turn him in.
Well, that leads me to my next question. If I have my phone on silent, I'm told that I would not hear this alert, correct?
You know, that's a good question. My phone was not on silent, and I heard it. You would receive it. You would receive a text, and I don't know whether it would override the silence thing. I guess it wouldn't, frankly.
I don't think it does.
It would be
And I think that's actually kind of stupid because let's say it's something that, you know, is a life-endangering event that you really want to be aware of, but you don't want to be woken up by everybody who calls you or texts you. It would be a good thing to have this thing alert you by your choice, though.
Yeah, and you could also have like an airplane mode or completely shut it off or not use a phone or put it in some sort of Faraday bag. There's lots of ways to not get this kind of information. If
you can
that's
turn
your
phone off?
Yeah, well, some people
can
still do that.
I can't turn my phone off.
Sometimes you can remove the battery.
Yes, Rob.
If your phone is on silent or off, you'll get the notification like you do for any text message, and next time you look at your phone, you'll see it. But to draw further parallels, Jim passed me a note from the Peanut Gallery, which reads Fahrenheit 451.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely.
What happens in Fahrenheit 451? They burn the books, but...
They burn the books, yes.
Okay, how does that relate to this?
Different kinds of emergencies.
Okay. All right. Well,
what we're moving steadily towards, I guess. Thank you, Jim. That's great.
Any other words, Bernie?
Well, I'm just saying this is an interesting technology. It was used effectively in this case to find an individual very quickly. I'm just saying we should be aware that such a powerful thing exists and be mindful that it exists and try to be watchful in how it's used and potentially abused in the future.
Okay, so I didn't get this alert because I was on Long Island. Kyle, you're on Long Island as well. So it's based on your location, your geographical location on your phone. Can you turn that off? Can you tell your phone, don't identify where I am?
It doesn't identify where you are because it goes from the cell towers to phones in its area. So that's why Bernie got it when he was in New York, even though his phone is registered, I assume, to outside.
So if you turn GPS off, it doesn't make a damn bit of difference.
I always have GPS off, and it still goes through.
Right, because they're sending the message to specific towers in a region, and they send it indiscriminately to everyone, just like a page might go out.
Now, there's this other message that you can't turn off at all called the presidential alert. Right, and does anybody know what that is?
I think it's the same concept.
Okay.
Yeah, there's different hierarchy of messages for this. I think it's emergency alert system, but you can turn off, I think, on some phones the alert. But if there's a highest level of alert, which is from the president, the White House, so the president can literally take over all the cell phones in the United States instantaneously and blast an audio message, the tones, and then the text message on all the cell phones. The president could do this 10 minutes from now. All the cell phones that of everybody that's listening to us in the United States would go off if the president decided to send one of these messages out.
But not if they're on silent. Not if they're on silent, right?
Probably not. I think the silence will trump that. No pun intended.
Don't say that. Don't use that word. But I bet in future generations of phones that will override the silent switch. I'll just bet it will. Okay, so that was an interesting little technological development that took place as a result of the chaos that was taking place in the city. And yeah, it's something to be worried about in the future. I do think though, in this particular case, as Kyle said, it worked. It did serve us. But as Bernie has expressed concern, maybe in the future it will be used for something a bit less nefarious and or more nefarious on the authorities' part. That's something to keep an eye on and to understand the technology, how it works. Speaking of technology, do we want to try using these new phones for the first time ever?
I think that would be cool.
Bernie, what do you think?
I think we should break the ice here. I don't know of any other producers who've taken advantage of this yet.
Well, because they don't know there are phone lines here. We haven't been told by anybody. So I know you were you played a part in this, so you actually found out the phone numbers. So, okay, folks, stand by for the first time ever, I believe. We're going to be giving out the phone number, the new phone number, which is not at all easy to remember. It's not like the other one. Wow. And even the area code is weird. Okay, and we're going to take your phone calls. Ready? Everybody ready? Got your pencils?
Yes.
All right. Area code 347-335-0786. I'm not kidding. That is our phone number. The first person that calls in, we'll put you on the air right now. 347-335-0786. Just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
While we're waiting for calls to come in,
it's already in.
Oh, okay.
Well, go ahead. Make your announcement.
Okay. Well, WBAI has screenings of a special movie called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Manhattan. Go to WBAI.org to get those tickets.
All right. We have our first phone call. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hey, congratulations on the phone's partially being restored.
Yeah, you sound great. Isn't this a good quality? Wow. I'm very impressed. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Nassau County. I'm on the South Shore.
Wow, okay, long-distance call? Good.
I just wanted to say, I got that same intrusive beeping, and I'm in the 516 area code, and I got it on my stupid smartphone.
Okay.
And it went off at about 8:30, as your co-host says, and it was going on incessantly, repeatedly. I ignored it until I was fully conscious to see what it was all about. I figured it was some nonsense. It wasn't quite nonsense. But I recall also about a month earlier, there was an Amber Alert. I forget where that originated from. That went off also. So these are becoming more frequent, and I think, the potential for abuse is certainly there.
Uh-huh. How do you see it being abused?
All kinds of pseudo-alarms, something that we should not be that afraid of. You know, like declare an emergency, something like that. You know, some Orwellian notion. Right now, I think it was put to good use in this instance, but I was not in the 212 area code, so I just wanted to say that it goes beyond just the immediate confines of Manhattan, I think.
Maybe the government could order a counter-protest. You know, like anybody who is with the regime and loyal Yeah, American, exactly. American loyalists, you must gather now to fight these repulsive protesters from the mid-left to the upper right.
Okay, all right, but with a President Trump, do you really think we're going to have to wait very long for that to happen?
No, they probably...
Just thought I'd add that. Congratulations, I hope to hear some good calls.
All right. Well, you're a good call. Don't put yourself down. Thank you for that call. I do notice that we only seem to have the ability to have one call, though. I didn't see any other calls come in.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's a one-at-a-time thing for now.
Bernie, do you know how many actual phone lines we have?
Let's not get greedy.
Supposedly one in the studio, and then one is a secret number that people call.
One? We had 12 before, yeah. Now we have one?
Be thankful.
No, I won't be thankful. I'm sorry.
I know. There should be two. It should roll over, but...
All right, we have another one. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine. Where are you calling from?
All right. Awesome. Also from Nassau County. You just blanketed with Nassau County calls.
Maybe our signal's only reaching Nassau County.
Well, it is the best county.
No, it's not. Don't put me in that position. Wow. What's on your mind, caller?
I just want to semi-correct you that at least on my phone, when my phone is on silent, the alerts come through loud and clear.
Really?
Or do they come out loud?
So now we need to sample if that and find out if that's model specific.
Well, how do we create an emergency?
Brand or carrier specific.
Yeah, we have to somehow create an emergency and test this out. How are we going to do that?
Yeah, right? That's what you need to do. The only reason I mention it is because, or that I think it may be brand specific, if you Google how to turn off Amber Alert, there are a lot of articles out there because people just don't want to be woken up at 2 a.m. for something that may not apply to them.
Mm-hmm. Find your own kid.
Well, true. No, I don't want to be that nefarious. But the point is that when they do these alerts, a lot of people are like, hey, you know, this doesn't have not much to do with me. I will say this. Maybe they changed it because that used to be a problem. And now, this latest alert, I did not get the loud noise when my phone was silent. So maybe things have changed, I guess. Maybe people complained enough.
Wait, you're saying that when you got the alert and your phone was on silent, you didn't get a tone?
I did not, but when I got Amber Alerts a couple years ago, when there were weather alerts, the silence would not silence the Amber Alert, and people would complain, how can you turn it off? So then what you say is correct, that I think they tried to change it so that if your phone is on silent, anything short of a presidential, you will not get the sound. However, the presidential, I think, will still go on if your phone is on silent.
Interesting.
So if aliens come out of the galaxy, we will get all... Sounds,
yeah, you should be able to have a little checkbox as to what kind of messages. Alien messages, I like that to come through. I like messages, you know, from certain people to override my silence, you know, and other things like that. But no presidential ones. I don't want to hear those, especially if worst case scenario happens. You know, more choice
there
to the
are
user.
Settings like this. There are settings, but they're very rudimentary. Go ahead.
The aliens have their own alert system.
Well, yeah, they probably can override our phones. Yes, Rob.
I got the alert as well, and I was in Queens. Caller, do you mind if I ask, are you maybe in Nassau near the Queens border? Or?
No. I work in near JFK, so I got the alert when I was working.
Oh, okay. So you're saying your phone number is 516, but you were in Queens.
Correct. And I think I think everyone who was in the city limits, plus maybe Jersey, was getting it. If you were outside of the city line Nassau, I do not believe you got it. I had a couple people who lived in Franklin Square, which is right on the border, and they did not get the alert.
Well, Bernie is in 215 area code. I'm sorry, Bernie, I gave out your area code.
That's okay.
No, there's only seven digits left. People can guess your whole phone number now. I'm sorry, I gave away three of them. but yeah, he was in the New York area, so he's living proof that, yeah, you don't have to be from New York to have gotten that. And if you were in 516 with your 516 phone, then you wouldn't have gotten the alert.
Correct. People, it didn't matter what area code you were in. If your phone was physically in the area they wanted, they could get you, which, you know, like you said, it could be open to abuse. It's kind of wild.
It's funny, though, because this guy could have taken a train out to 516 and then everybody would be looking for him in the wrong place.
It's probably like It's probably like a web form with like a map, and you just outline the area that you want, and then you fill in, you know, what is the alert, and the alert type, and priority, and then you hit submit.
Okay. Seems reasonable. Hey, thanks for that call. We're going to try and fit in one more. All right, and let me give out that phone number one more time. I have to read it because I can't memorize it. 347-335-0786. I'm curious what happens when you call that line and somebody else is on it. In fact, Rob, could you do that after we get the next call?
Sure.
347-335-0786. We already have a call. We're going to take that now. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Good evening. I would like to know that web address I can call to about an undelivered premium.
Bernie, maybe you can help with this.
Best to do is email us at oth@2600.com. We need your name, address, phone number if possible, your premium confirmation code, what it was you pledged for, how much you paid on your receipt, and what other information. Just basically all that stuff. And we will try to track it down for you.
Okay, hopefully that helps. And Rob is here with the report as to what happens when you call this line and someone's already on it.
Let's see if I can get the sound across.
What is that noise? What do you call that?
It's a sickly busy.
I haven't heard that sound in such a long time.
It's an actual busy signal, and now we know how to get one again.
So, folks, if you call us and we're using the phone, you'll get a busy signal. No call waiting for us. Wow, okay, we have one phone line coming in. That's kind of cool. Thanks for those people who called in. Write to us, oth@2600.com. We'll be happy to field your opinions and requests. If you haven't gotten a premium, write to us. If you have gotten a premium, write to us, oth@2600.com. We'll be back next week. Hey, next week is our special Maker Faire show. Yes, because Maker Faire is coming up, not this weekend coming up, but the weekend after that, and we'll have tickets to give away. So mark it down on your calendars, and we'll see you next week.
Make stuff. Get ready for that.
That's right.
Yeah.
And break stuff, too, but then fix it. Good night.